Why are we wasting our resources on something that is so kind of fundamental? Because at the end of the day, we as taxpayers, we're paying for it because now we're litigating over whether someone that's born in the United States is a U.S. citizen.
All persons born in the United States are citizens. Can you get around the 14th Amendment with an executive action?
Well, we're going to have to get a change. We maybe have to go back to the people, but we have to end it.
What's good, y'all? Your boy Brandon back again, another episode of the On the Run podcast. This week, we have a very special episode. I let you guys know early on the stories, and as you guys know, immigration is a hot topic in this country. There's a lot of people who are not sure what their rights are. There's a lot of moving parts going on, and there's questions everywhere. So we thought, what better than to invite Las Vegas's very own Africa Sanchez, immigration attorney, to sort of help us out and answer some of those unanswered questions. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for having me, Brandon. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely, yeah. Thank you for making this happen. Also, shout out to Soshi behind the camera for making this happen. But yeah, let's get right to it. We were talking a little bit before the cameras started rolling about some of the moving parts that are changing due to the new presidential administration. In your opinion, being on that side of the law, what are some of the biggest changes that you've seen so far?
You know, I think the way the media is portraying these changes, I think some of them are real and some of them are just a scare tactic. And so I think that's the part that you're trying to educate people about, what's real and what's not real, and, you know, how to control the fear that it's being instilled, you know, by the media and by the things that Trump is saying and doing, some of them legal and some of them not legal.
Yeah, I think that's definitely a good point. I think a lot of people, because of that, you know, just throwing caution to the wind and sort of just getting on the podium and saying things for the sake of saying them. Mm-hmm. Sometimes we don't know where we land. And sometimes, like you said, he's saying things to rile up his supporters and sort of get them to understand that he's kind of trying to make progress on that end. And then sometimes he's saying things that end up not being true. And I think that's where the problem is most of the time. You know, like these statements that are being made are not carefully thought out as they would be with other people. And, you know, some people say that's a good thing, some people say it's a bad thing, but I think in cases like this, we really figure out that when you cause confusion, right, it just, nobody wins. Nobody wins at all.
Yeah. It's hard. I think it definitely, who is viewing too, you know, like an immigrant is definitely seeing the views in a certain manner, where legal permanent residents are viewing things too in a certain manner. So it just depends who the viewer is, right? And so I think, like for me, in the field that I work in, a lot of the immigrants are scared, and they're asking me, okay, I'm considering, do I need to sell my house? Do I need to move back? And these are people that have been here for 30 plus years, right? We haven't had any type of immigration reform in a long, long time, right? So there's a lot of people that may have been here illegally for long periods of time. And so now they're facing, they may have several homes, they have established families here, and they're really considering, do I need to go back to my home country because I'm going to be deported? And I'd rather have control over how I go than to be removed forcefully, you know? And so I think that there's where we're like, whoa, 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 take a pause. Let's evaluate everyone's individual case and see what the risks are, because the risks have always been here, right? There's some things that have not changed, and he hasn't changed. The law hasn't changed. You know, the immigration law it remains the same. There's some things that, as president, as the president, he is the head of the executive branch, right? So there's some things that he can do with the administrative portions of the government that he can change. And those were the executive orders come in, but they have to be within the law. So I think that's the part where you try and educate everyone that it's like, whoa, 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 hold up. You know, you have rights. Take a deep breath. You know, like, calm down. Let's evaluate this and see what your options are. And sometimes you do have options and sometimes you don't. You know, that's the other part that is very frustrating.
What's good, y'all? This year, we really want the pod to blow up, but we need your help to make it happen. So stop right there. Go drop a like, drop a comment down below. Now back to the episode.
I think one of the things that came under fire the most, at least recently, in my opinion, were the executive order to get rid of birthright citizenship, which to me is a little bit controversial. Well, not a little bit, definitely controversial. But how does it work exactly? So when you make an executive order,
is it up to the court system to then decide that's unconstitutional and then they roll it back? Or is
someone has to challenge it?
Yeah.
That's the part, right? Because someone has to challenge it. If no one challenges it, then that's what's going to be followed. But with something so mind-blowing as that, right? Something that is written in the Constitution, the fact that we even have to expend our dollars, right? Because at the end of the day, we as taxpayers, we're paying for it, because now we're litigating over whether someone that's born in the United States is a U.S. citizen. I mean, it's just kind of like, why are we wasting our resources on something that is so kind of fundamental? You know, like, it just makes it, I mean, make it make sense. I don't know. There's just some things that just don't make sense. But yeah, if it's not challenged, if the executive orders that are signed and announced, if they're not challenged, then that's what's going to be the law of the land, if you will, you know, while the president, you know, while he's president, and then the next president comes in and they might change that purview.
Yeah. To me, I think the use of executive orders has definitely increased, at least in recent years. I don't know. Maybe I was just younger back then. I didn't really understand what was going on in the country, but definitely, you know, since Biden, since Trump's first term, then Biden, now Trump again, like, those three offices have really just, you know, all you hear about is executive order, executive order, executive order. And it almost feels like we're sort of switching from that checks and balances.
I definitely think, like, with immigration, I think that that's where the executive orders come into play. And I think part of the problem is because there's been such, it's so bipartisan, right? Yeah. And so they can't, there has been no type of immigration reform. And I actually think that the first president that really tried to expand that was President Obama, right? Mm-hmm. When he provided DACA. So, like, DACA was something that wasn't permitted by the law, mm-hmm. right? So he said, he did an executive order and said, you know, if you were here before you were 15 years old and you were here before 2007, then we're going to allow you to get a work permit. You don't ever get a resident card, right? But we're going to allow you to get a work permit. And so that part wasn't challenged, which was interesting. But he did, when he tried to do it for parents as well, which really would have been kind of like an amnesty.
For sure.
Then they were like, whoa, 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 like you're going too far, right? Yeah. And so now, you know, that was stopped. So it's been interesting. Then when President Trump came in, the first term, he said, hey, 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 we're going to end DACA. And so then there was litigation about that. That's still pending, right? Yeah. Like, DACA is something that is in the air, that, you know, if you talk to Dreamers, they're concerned about whether that's going to continue or not. And now that they've had work permits since 2012, yeah. Some of them continuously.
Yeah.
That's like 12 years. They've established careers yeah. And now they're like, oh man, what's going to happen?
Yeah. My best friend is a dreamer under DACA, and he has a house. He got a kid now. I'm like, there's no way. I don't see him leaving. They're not going to make him leave, but it's scary.
Yeah, it is scary. Just that part of that, you don't know what's going to happen in the future. I don't know. I'm really hopeful. Like, it's time. We need some immigration reform. It's time. I feel like the time is now. And I keep thinking about, how do we do that, right? How do we do immigration reform? How do we say, okay, yeah, it's time. It's time for change.
Yeah.
We can't have people that have been here for 30 years and not be able, and oh man, it's going to be bad because now these people, they're like senior citizens. They won't have the right to Social Security, even though they've paid into the system. They won't have the right to Medicare, Medicaid. I don't know. For me, it's really disheartening when I have 70-year-olds come in and say, hey, you know what? I've been here for 30 plus years and I don't have, they have to keep on working. Because they don't have the resources to what they have been paying into. I don't know. It just doesn't seem, just, my opinion.
No, definitely not.
No, you're right. You know, you're right. It's unjust.
I think the one of the sad things about, like, a common misconception is, like, whenever I do talk to people who are, like, pro-MAGA and pro, like, deport Mexicans, right? Yeah. They say, like, well, they're taking our funds. They get FAFSA. They get these benefits from the state, and that's totally not true, right? Like, if you came to this country legally, like, you did not get any of these benefits, right? In fact, like, you pay into some of these benefits and you will never get a return from them. And a common misconception is when people say, like, oh good, like, I think a few weeks back one of the top headlines was like, FAFSA has been paused, and a lot of people are like, cool, all of these Mexicans are not going to get FAFSA who are undocumented. And it turns into fact of like, oh, actually, whoever falls into this category of FAFSA in general, you guys don't get any regardless of your race, right? And it's very interesting to see like a lot of these now executive orders, especially with DEI, where people are just kind of take a notion of like, hey, this is meant for these race of people, this group of people, and it's now starting to affect them, right? We saw it going to the government, DEI and everything for that matter. So I think that's very interesting to see.
Yeah, you know, when you were talking about misconceptions, I think with people that are not, or they don't have like an immigrant in their family, or they don't know anyone, they don't know anyone impacted by the immigration laws. They're like, well, why don't they just come in legally? Why don't they just apply for their citizenship? Like,
it's very ignorant. I'm like,
what are you talking about? There's certain ways that you can obtain legal, a legal work permit that you can apply. There's like these limited things, and they can't. That's the reality. That's why we need the reform, you know? So there's just so many limited ways that for that to happen that it's like, oh my goodness. So yeah, how do you educate people about that too? I think that's how, right? Maybe that is how that we say people, okay, this is why we need the immigration reform, because they want to be legal. They just don't qualify. They don't fit the very limited ways that you're able to obtain status.
Yeah, I think for me, the problem has always been we're almost kept, and I count myself in there because I'm a first generation American. My family has directly been involved with all the immigration talk. I've got friends and family who are dreamers, like you said. And what I hate the most is the fact that they always keep us in the middle. And I feel like both sides really use us to whatever way they want. You know, on one side, we're looked at as the bad guy, and we're looked at as the enemy of America, and we're taking people's jobs, and we're leeches on society. And people talk so bad about us just to have someone to target. And then on the other side, we're kind of kept as, you know, we're always kept in this limbo. And like you said, we haven't had immigration reform in a long time. And, you know, I have my aunt and uncle who came during Reagan. So they mm-hmm. got to be a part of that amnesty. And then you have people like my parents and some of my other aunts and uncles who are from the same family, from the same town, grew up in the same house, same morals, same principles, same everything. But because they come here a little bit later, their situations are completely different.
Yeah.
And that to me is what never made sense, because if we're going to say that people who are illegal are bad people, it wouldn't make sense that there's a cutoff line and you say, well, you're only bad if you came after this date, but not before this date. There has to be, in my opinion, a different way to evaluate whether someone should have that path to becoming a citizen, right? If you're a productive member of society, if you're paying into these systems like we're talking about, you know, if you're just trying to live an honest, good life, I don't see the problem in welcoming you into our country. I understand, right? Laws are laws for a reason. And whether you broke the law or you didn't, I think in this case, it's a very particular case. It's not like other criminal
cases. I just, you know, like you bring up a very, very good point. Like for me, it's like, okay, how long, by what time do you pay your dues? After you've been here, okay, you are right. You entered illegally. Okay. You committed a crime. But at what point have you paid your debt? Is it 10 years? Is it 15 years? Is it 20 years? Yeah. I don't think it should be forever.
Yeah,
you know, so at what point is it okay that you're like, okay, or is it that you pay a multa, you pay a penalty, right? You pay a fine. Okay, I entered illegally. Here's the fine that I pay. There's got to be a solution. It can't be you never get to get status. That can't be the solution. And that's what it is right now, right?
Yeah, absolutely. They're,
yeah, you can tell I'm getting all
no, I deservedly so, deservedly so. But something that I keep thinking about with, like, you know, why immigration is such a you know,
hot topic,
obviously, is like, I feel like there's like a lot of like subversive language that's used when people talk about it, right? Mm-hmm. Because if I illegally immigrated from Canada, there's no, you know, oh, you're illegal, deport them, But if I illegally immigrated from Mexico, then all that weird language gets brought up. You know what I'm mm-hmm. trying to say?
Yeah.
So, you know, we were speaking about this before the cameras turned on. Kind of speak to how, like, the media kind of portrays illegal immigrants, certainly from Mexico, as, like, these people we got to get rid of.
Yeah, it's... I definitely feel like since this January, those images have been changing. For me, they've been changing. And as a practitioner, right, as an immigration practitioner, I really been kind of like, okay, is this really happening? You know, like the raids and the, you know, the things that they're showing on TV and that they're really honing down. I can say that I would get those calls right at my office. Like I have immigration clients. I'm not getting any. I'm not getting any type of those calls that they're doing raids here in Vegas or that, you know, the normal things are happening. If you commit a crime, guess what? You know what? You are going to be deportable. You will be put in removal proceedings and you should. Absolutely. I mean, and you should, you know, like if you're committing a crime, so those things, you know, so I think that there's this kind of like propagandizing and feeding into the messaging that the president wants to portray. I saw one interesting thing where they were saying, okay, like he is starting these mass deportations. And now instead of using, it's so many that instead of using a regular airplane, you know, like a normal commercial flight that would be used, now they're bringing in the Air Force, an Air Force plane to deport these people. But it turns out it's the same number, right? It's the same individuals that they were going after before. So I think that part is kind of like the spin, you know, just the media spin of trying to portray certain things. I definitely would say that a big change, at least here, is if you're detained for misdemeanors, you know, for even a misdemeanor, unfortunately, I think that DV and DUIs, you know, domestic violence and DUIs are a big part of detentions that occur at Metro here. And so prior, I would say under the Biden, it was kind of unlikely that you would be put in removal proceedings. I think now 100% you're going to be put in removal proceedings. ICE is going to come by and they're going to take you. Again, you know, like I think that would be my word of caution, you know, everybody like, don't be arrested, don't do criminal activity, you know, because yeah, that is going to put you in removal proceedings, you know, so kind of be smart about things.
Stop right there. 60% of y'all watching this are still not subscribed, man. What's wrong with y'all? Tap that subscribe button. Now back to the episode.
I don't think most people, and I would say the vast majority of people, wouldn't have a problem with allowing the people who have committed crazy crimes, all these people that are like felons and multiple time convictions, to be deported if they're here illegally. Mm-hmm. I don't think that's something anybody's advocating for. Correct. And I think that's just how the media always spins it. The media always spins it to be like, we want everybody to stay, as if we're somehow crazy and we would want to live next to people like that, you know? And they always try to make it seem as like, well, would you open your house and let somebody else come in? And it's like, no one's asking you to open your house and let them sleep next to you, right? We're saying allowing these people who have already been here, who already live next door to you, who already go to school with you, who already pay taxes, who already contribute to social programs, to be able to stay. And, you know, having dealt with that directly, I remember when I was little, like my dad got detained. And it wasn't for a crime. It was simply for trying to get on an airplane to come back because he was working out of state. And the hassle it was to have to deal with everything, I can like absolutely sympathize with all the people who are struggling with that right now, because I went through that, right? And I went through that as a kid. And yeah, definitely stressful. Mm-hmm. And just looking back at it, I'm like, I'm glad and I'm happy that things turned out okay for us, because if certain little things didn't get, you know, the certain boxes didn't get checked correctly, or even just the way we process things, right? If I hadn't had handled things and my siblings hadn't had handled things the way they were supposed to be handled, who knows where we would be right now after being affected by something so tragic. And I was like 10 years old at that time. So definitely it's a hot topic for people.
Well, you know, I think the fear is really real. I too, you know, like this thing has brought up a lot of, like you said, you know, like at least for me, it's brought up a lot of trauma, and I would call it trauma. I came illegally when I was 7 years old, and I just remember it was in the 1980s, and there was times like, oh, you know, the neighbor called La Migra, and so my mom's like telling all of us, you know, my 7, 9, and 10-year-old sister, like, you can't move, you can't talk, you know, because La Migra's outside. And just living in that fear, it's just, man, it's not good, you know? No, and definitely. So I feel like that we're creating that again now, you know, that fear about staying in your home. And I don't know, that's the part that I'm like, we cannot live like this. You know, we cannot live in fear.
Yeah, that's a very good point. I remember growing up being very little. I was my parents' firstborn, so they were still growing as I was young, and you know, growing up in a different country, they don't know how things work, and mm-hmm. I'm sure they were scared. So sometimes I would overhear conversations they would have, or they never shielded it away from me, the fact that they came here illegally. They never like hid it away and like pretended not to. And I remember having those conversations, and just like sometimes I would have like nightmares, or I would just wake up in the middle of the night and I would be so scared, because I would think about my parents getting deported. I'd be like, what would we do? Would we get separated? Would we stay here together? And as I grew up, like some of that did go away, especially mm-hmm. towards like middle school, high school. And, you know, up until a few years, it did go away. And even still, I would say that's a very big thing. I would say just don't be afraid to live. Obviously, be careful, right? You know, stay out of trouble, you know, do what you're supposed to do. But don't let the fear stop you from living the life.
Yeah, you gotta make good choices, you know. Absolutely, like make good choices. And I don't know. I feel like we've gone through these eras where things get hot again and then they cool down. And so I'm like, okay, do you remember the first presidency? It felt the same way, you know. Like there was things where initially I thought, okay, look, if you get arrested for traffic tickets. Like, okay, you're not going to be put in removal. You're not going to be put in removal proceedings. Well, lo and behold, people were being placed in removal proceedings because they were detained for traffic tickets. I think that we're back in that era, you know, that is going to happen. So, yeah, it's just kind of tough. You know, like, what do you do? You know, you try and make good choices and not put yourself in situations where you're going to be detained or arrested. There's going to be certain limitations as to the space, you know, like, okay, who's going to be released and who's not? Because you still have a right, right? If you still have a right to see an immigration judge, you still have a right to remain silent. There's so many things that you still have a right to, right? And so when someone's coming in and I'm talking to them, I'm like, okay, I'm the officer, you know, I'm going to be like, hey, you know, you can be released right now. Do you want to sign your voluntary departure? And they're like, yes. And I'm like, oh my God, didn't we just have this conversation? Didn't we just have this conversation? Yeah. You know, no, you have the right to see an immigration judge. You have the right to kind of figure out what options you may have. I will tell you this too. Like I think if there are people that had the ability to fix the situation, I've been having people that came to see me maybe 3 years ago or 2 years ago. And now they're like, okay, now I really got to do something, you know, yeah. Like it's put a little
fire
in them. Like, okay, now I got to do something. I'm like, oh my goodness. To me, that's kind of frustrating too, yeah. Because there's a lot of people that come to see me, and I want to say maybe out of 10 consults, maybe three fall within some of the ways. Pathways. Yeah. The pathways that you can gain, legal, legal immigration status. Right. And out of that, then some people just decide not to follow through, you know? So you're just like, well, I don't know. So I don't, if there is reform, I hope people take advantage of it. Right.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Leading into that, what is some of the most common cases you see in your office, regardless if they follow the pathway or if they don't follow?
Well, I think like the most is like the most common is that if they have a 21-year-old child, or that the child is going to be 21, U.S. citizen child, right? They come in and they say, okay, yeah, you know, my U.S. citizen born child is going to be ready to turn 21. So what are my options? You know, what are my options at that point? The way that immigration law says now is that if you entered illegally, you're going to have to consular process, right? And consular process is that you're going to have to go outside of the U.S. You're going to have to go back to your home country in order for you to enter legally. And when you go out, guess what? You're going to be penalized for your illegal entry and for your illegal period that you were here in the United States. And so you will not be able to ask, you won't have a qualifying relative to ask for a waiver. So you're going to be stuck out in your home country. And it could be for 3 years, it could be for 10 years, depending on how long you were here illegally, right? And so then people are like, oh my God, you know, but this is my life. This is where I live. Like, I can't, I can't, I can't leave, right. you know? So then it's like, it becomes like this Debbie Downer conversation that you're having, right? Because do you have a parent who's a resident or U.S. citizen? Do you have a spouse so that you would be able to request for the waiver? And I would say probably 5 out of 10 times, if not more, they don't have the qualifying relative. So then it becomes like, okay, well, that's not really going to be an option. Mm-hmm. You know, then I do have people that come when they're older. They're like, man, if I would have done it, the 10 years would have already passed. I would already be here legally. I would already, you know, so it's like these, you're putting these things out there. And so they're really hard decisions to make, you know, that's the number one. I get that a lot with the 21. If they entered legally different, you know, then they'll be able to adjust here. It's a very quick process. So Those are the marriage ones, a lot of, you know, marriage based, where you marry a U.S. citizen. So those are really good. Those are good, too. Those can sometimes have a good result. It could be long, you know, again, because immigration is if you did not enter legally, if you have a U.S. citizen or a legal permanent resident, it might take you 7 years for you to be able to be here legally. It's a long time, you know,
for sure.
It's a long time. Yeah, but it's so rewarding. I mean, when we get those green cards, and when we get difficult cases too, maybe with some criminal history or some immigration history, you know, where they've been detained before, and there might be some fraud or some, you know, those cases are fun. I like getting those cases and finding
the solution.
Yeah, finding the solution for sure. Yeah.
So besides having a child who's over 21 and marriage, what are some of like the lower or lesser known ways of obtaining citizenship?
The lesser, I would say, BAWA is one of them. You know, when you're a victim of domestic violence, and it doesn't have to be just physical, because I think people think of like, oh, I had to be beat up, you know, but it could be emotional abuse. It does have to be by a legal permanent resident or U.S. citizen spouse, but it could also be by your children. You know, like it could also be by your children. So if your adult children are abusive towards you, that might be a way for you to obtain your green card. So that is a way. The U visa is a way too. Like when you're a victim of a crime, I think that is being more. I think people just wait a long time. So that's probably kind of problematic. You know, like I'll be like, oh, I had something that occurred 20 years ago or 25 years ago. You're like, ah, man, go get the report. You know, like it's so those ones I think are kind of lesser known.
And probably people are afraid to speak out when stuff like that happens because of their immigration status.
Correct.
Right?
For that one, the victim of crime, what does that entail, or what's the scope of that whole victim of a crime?
It has to be serious. And so it has to be a serious offense. And like for, I get a lot where, well, interestingly, in the victim of a crime, domestic violence is included in there. Okay, so if you're a victim of domestic violence, that will qualify you. That's a qualifying crime. But a simple battery is not. So it has to be a felonious assault. So if you don't have that type of, I'm going to call it amorous relationship that is required for a domestic violence. And it's just like you got beat up at the street. If it was considered a simple battery, it will not be enough. If it was with the gun, then it'll bring it up, you know. There's also, and you could be, sometimes it could be through your children, you know, like, and so if your child has been abused, or I've had several cases where the child has died, sexually molested or raped, the parents will be able to come in through that.
Yeah.
So, you know, those are usually hard cases, you know, like, they're based on trauma, really, you know? Sometimes there has to be something good that comes out of something bad is the way that I kind of put it, you know. I'm like, hey, something good has to come out of this. Sometimes it's like that, like the removal cases, you know. There's some clients that come in and they've been here a very long time, and they might have a child with autism, or they might have a special needs child. You might be like, oh man, you you probably would want to be detained, you know, because if you're put in removal proceedings, you're probably going to qualify for cancellation of removal. Mm. But again, I'm like, man, but it's such a traumatic thing, you know. They're like, oh, I'm like, what do you mean it's so traumatic? I'm like, oh, because you get detained, you're going to be incarcerated in order to get you out. Yeah. It's not enchilame otra is what I say, you know. It's not like this whole process to... It's going to be quite traumatic for the family. Absolutely. You're probably going to need a motion for bond. It's a whole thing, you know? But again, maybe something good will come out of it. So it's all these catch-22s, you know? Yeah.
Yeah, that's the difficult side, I guess. There always has to be some kind of sacrifice in order for something good to come out
yeah,
of it.
Yeah, I hate that too, you know? Like, I hate sometimes where I'm telling the immigrant, like, man, you have to sacrifice yourself yet again, right? Yeah. You got to sacrifice yourself again and in order to get that legal status. But I, you know, how much sacrifice is enough? Like at what point it, yeah, that's why we need the immigration reform.
Absolutely. In your opinion, what does that immigration reform look like?
I think that we probably don't need to reinvent the wheel, right? So I think, like, if we go back to something where, yeah, if you were here before a certain date and if you can show that you've been a good citizen, then why not? You know, why not give you status? And it might be that you still need a qualifying relative, although I've met some really good people that just never had children. Mm. Never had children and never got married. Why should they be penalized? I mean, why? You know, like, I like the idea of, like, okay, if you've done your taxes for so long, then maybe that would give you the benefit. You know, I just think that we got to think outside the box. I don't know if we were there. You know, I don't think that our Congress is open-minded enough to open it up that way. So I know that the marriage-based, they're always concerned about fraud and people just getting,
you know, 90-day fiancé.
Yeah, getting married in order to be able to obtain that that immigration benefit. What's been interesting is that lately when I've been going to the interviews here, at least at our local office, it seems like all of the offices have the, which is something new, they have like signs up that says, you know, marriage fraud is punishable by a fine and you could even be incarcerated, which I just think is really, really interesting. I'm like, okay, they're sending a message here too. You know,
everyone, yeah, for sure.
Yeah. But I tell, you know, when I have potential new clients come in and I'm, you know, I'm like, hey, just like, especially marriage based, I'm like, just like you're interviewing me to see if you're going to hire me, I'm interviewing you to see whether I'm going to take your case.
Right.
Because if I don't think it's real, I just don't think it's worth it. You're putting yourself in, you're digging a hole, you know, getting. Yeah. So, all that kind of is. It's kind of interesting too.
And for all the people who have, like an uncertain immigration status, like you said, if we do get that path to citizenship or the amnesty, what are some of the things you would recommend them? You mentioned staying up to date with their taxes, but what other things would you recommend for them to make sure they're getting taken care of in case there ever does come a solution?
Oh man, stay clean of your criminal stuff, you know, like take care of your tickets, like even those, you know, I think it's gotten better because they've started to decriminalize a lot of those tickets. So now I just had an interesting case. Like they've been here since like 1997, right? And there was like this period, you guys are probably too young, but mm-hmm. there was a period here in Vegas where you couldn't get a driver's license, right? If you were undocumented. Oh, yeah. So there was people that had thousands of dollars in traffic fines for no driver's license, right? It was like, I feel a certain way about that because I think that it was a way for like the city to make money, right? Okay, it was like the biggest scam. But you had people that had, I mean thousands, and that was my guy, you know, like he had thousands of dollars in traffic tickets for no driver's license. That was the offense. He ended up getting, he was in house arrest, okay?
For tickets.
And so they ended up, he was eligible, you know, he had his adjustment of status interview, and this was just a few weeks ago. And I think that the officer had a hard time, you know, and I had a stack
yeah.
of his criminal history, which was not really criminal, was all traffic. And the officer had a hard time understanding why he did 5 months of house arrest for traffic tickets. And I'm like, well, because this was in the 2000s when he couldn't get a driver's license. And so, look, he's got like 10 tickets for no driver's license. And the first ticket was like $200. The next one was for $500. The next one was for $1,000. So he had like $8,000 worth of traffic tickets that, you know, you never really pay off. Right. And so then it's like, oh, you haven't paid them off. And it's 5 years later. Now you have house arrest. So I'm like, okay, does that make him not eligible to adjust? No, he gets to adjust. But she couldn't get it. She didn't understand. You know, I'm like, okay, look, I'm going to bring you the law that said that they couldn't get, you know, that didn't pass until 2012. So anyway, it's just kind of frustrating. Some of those things that just seem so kind of like not a big deal, you know, like it looks like a big deal because normally house arrest is for something a little bit more serious than no driver's license tickets.
No, for sure. And shout out to all the OG Vegas people, because I remember when I was little, my parents, that was a thing. I remember there used to be a lady that would go to the DMV on the weekends and she would help everybody who didn't speak English and who didn't know like how to apply properly to get like a license. I think that was the only way like my parents were able to get driver's licenses and stuff. So I don't know where that lady is now, but like, shout out to her.
Shout out to her. I know. I'm like, it's like, and I think that there was a time period where then that ended too, you know, where they ended up checking. And now it's crazy with the real ID.
That's a new thing.
Yeah.
That face recognition.
Yeah.
Yeah.
God, if you had a license in somebody else's name, now there's no way around it. They're going to find your face and be like, and why did you get a driver's license with?
Maria
or whoever it was, you're like, damn.
Thank y'all so much for making it this far into the episode. If you're enjoying the episode, go ahead and drop a comment down below and let us know who you want us to interview next.
Something I was thinking about too, like the more you've been speaking, like speak to like the makeup usually of your clients, right? Because you know, when it comes to like media, like they want us to think that illegal immigrants are people that, you know, have like $2 to their name and jumped over a gate. But the more you've been speaking, it's like people who are married, people who are business owners, you know, people who have graduated college.
Oh, man. Yeah. It just like you have these very, it's very, the spectrum is so broad, right? You have very, very successful people that you wouldn't think are illegal.
Yeah.
You know, that you're like, wait, what? But man, we definitely have the fight in us for sure. Because I mean, I was illegal at one point, you know. So I'm like, I don't know. I just think we definitely have the fight in them, and it's not only Latinos.
Yeah,
you know, it's from all different types of. I have a Romanian client right now. I have someone from Turkey, and I mean, they're just from all over the world. You know, I'm like, yeah, I had someone come in this week, which is actually kind of like a sad one, you know, like she got her bachelor's degree. She was a dreamer. She wasn't my client. She was going with another attorney and they applied for a U visa. And usually with the U visa, if you have children, you know, like a parent, an adult can petition through the U visa. If you were the victim, you can pull, I'm going to use the word pull or bring with you your spouse and any children under 21, and they can get status through you. And so here it was the dad was going to pull his wife and the daughter. The daughter had DACA, and then they applied for a U visa. She got her U visa work permit, because under Biden you could, while the case was pending. So I guess she asked her attorney at the time, you know, do I need to renew my DACA? And the attorney's like, no, you don't. You already have your U visa. Now with DACA, if you don't renew within the year, you lose it. Turns out that her U visa got denied. And so now she doesn't have status. She's got a house, you know, she's got a job. She's got that. She's going to lose, you know, her job is going to lose. She's going to lose her job because she doesn't have, you know, now she's married to a U.S. citizen. She'll have a way to fix it, but she's going to go without status. Probably for 7 years, so you're just like, man, I don't know. It's tough. Like there's some really compelling stories out there, you know?
That's a very big one we got from a lot of our listeners regarding DACA. just because we are in that age of like, we just graduated kind of college in the last few years, and a lot of our classmates and friends, you know, were able to go to college thankfully through DACA, but again, they don't get any government assistance. They get nothing. So for everybody who has that misconception, like, it's completely
no
off.
FAFSA.
Nothing, bro. And it's like, for us, we think about like, how do we barely make it with that help, let alone without that? But regarding them, there's a thing called advanced parole. I'm sure you know, but for people that don't know, advanced parole is basically when you have DACA, you're not allowed to leave the country. And if you leave, whether you come back or not is a very big if. But there's a thing called advanced parole that you can apply to under certain circumstances. However, it's not even certain that if they grant your advanced parole, when you come back, they allow you in. Is that correct?
Well, okay, look, I think that that's one of those misconceptions, right? Because I practice that. I have every single one of my clients. No one has had an issue. No one, you know, like, you're definitely going to have the conversation, you know, like, and the times have changed, right? I would say, like, under Biden, man, if you had DACA and you did not apply for the advanced parole, shame, shame on you, because those were being granted within 4 months. And they were like, pa dentro, you know, like, I would even say with the removal order, you know, like, you, I would even be like, hey, under Biden, you should go and come back in and have your legal entry. Now that's different, you know, and I've actually been surprised, because one of the things under the first Trump presidency is that he stopped advanced paroles for DACAs. So that was one of the things he did. I actually thought that that was one of the first executive orders that was going to come out, that, you know, no more advanced paroles for DACA recipients, but that that order hasn't come out yet. So, you know, like, oh man, when he won, then I was having all these dreamers come in November, you know, November, December, like, okay, now I want to apply for the advanced parole.
Right.
Yeah. And then I was hesitant. I was like, I don't think you should, you know, because I think come January,
things might change,
you know, they're going to change. And I think it's, and then I think it's too risky. Like, I don't know. I just didn't feel comfortable. Right now that it hasn't changed, I'm like, we're evaluating the cases, you know. With Dreamers, it's kind of, for me, I feel a little bit more at ease. Because Dreamers have to be almost perfect, right?
Yeah.
You have to be almost perfect. I don't know. I just, again, it's one of those sacrifices. Guess what? You don't get to go out, have yourself a good time at the club and get a DUI because you are done. You know, like, there's so many things that you just can't be. You can't be as carefree. You really can't. So if you have DACA, you almost have to be almost perfect, you know? So I don't know. So for them, I feel a little bit less, I feel less worried, you know, unless I have a removal order, which, you know, has happened. You know, sometimes your parents petition you and you didn't even know. And now you have a removal order.
Yeah. Speaking on that.
Yeah.
How many of your cases would you say, or even potential clients come in and the fault is on the client for not acting on it? Right. So for not getting their documents, or for not setting up appointments, for not applying for certain aspects of it.
It happens more than you think, you know? Like, I just had a consult like 2 weeks ago. A mechanical engineer, okay? Obviously somebody very educated, and he's working, and he just forgot to renew his DACA, and now it's like a year and a half later. And his employer was like, never asked him for like, hey, where is it, right? So he just forgot. Mechanical engineer, like, do you know what I'm saying? I'm just like, like, are you serious right now?
Yeah,
are you serious?
Mechanical engineers I've met are that bright.
I'm like,
that's true.
All right,
We studied mechanical engineering. Yeah. That's what I said.
Oh. Yeah, so. You guys,
same with us.
Sometimes.
Dear Lord, have mercy on my soul. Well, I'm just saying, like, with those things. I don't know. I just think it's hard because, like, most dreamers, they've been here all of their life, you know? So they're Americans as far as I'm concerned. I mean, you know, you're more, I don't know. And so, I don't know. It's hard for them to balance that, right? Mm-hmm. Like, oh man, you do get the extremes where, you know, they're applying like 6 months early because the
so
fear.
Worried.
Yeah, they're
sure.
So worried.
And that goes back to my point earlier about, I hate the fact that it's so in the middle. Like, if these people have to be basically, like you said, basically perfect on paper, and they've been here since forever, they speak the language, they go to school here, they work here, why is there not a way for them to just become part of the system fully? That way, you know, they're a productive member of our society, and they also have the benefits of being able to leave the country, you know, not have that peace of mind of not having to apply for something every year or every few years or whatever the case may be. I don't know why. It's like so inefficient, in my opinion.
It is so inefficient. I think I'm hopeful. I am not losing hope. I actually feel like something good has to come out. Like I feel like it's time. I feel like, yeah, it's time. And if anyone is going to get the benefit of any type of immigration reform, I believe it's going to be the Dreamers, you know? And so I'm like this. I'm like, I don't know if we all put it out into the universe, then it'll happen, you know? Then it's like, oh, I feel like it's time. So I'm most hopeful for the Dreamers.
What are some of the most common ways that they can get citizenship?
That advanced parole, you know, because that advanced parole, especially if they entered illegally and they could get the benefit of having that legal entry. At least in my experience and in my practice, I would say maybe not 9, but 8 out of 10 of the Dreamers are married to a U.S. citizen, or they have children, you know. So it's just going to be a matter of time that U.S. citizen child will turn 21 and they'll be able to adjust their status and get their green card. And those ones for me they're very quick, right? Because immigration already knows everything about you. So if you have DACA or you're a Dreamer, and then you're able to adjust status because you have a qualifying relationship, or I want to say like those approvals are like within 4 to 6 months, because I mean, it's that quick, you know, they already know you. They already know your life.
Yeah. I guess it makes it easier to be in the system in that case.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So yeah, I'm hoping that you know, like when you can take advantage of the immigration laws that are in effect, that you have the benefit and you can apply for, then don't wait around. Like, it's your time. Like, let's do it. Let's go, you know? And so I tell that to clients or potential new clients when they come in. I'm like, oh my gosh, you know, like you can do something. You can do it. If you don't come back to me, it's fine, but get this done, you know? Like, find your person that's going to help you through this and get this done. I have to say that one of the things that worries me about this whole fear that is being instilled is that I think that there's going to be a whole bunch of notario fraud. And I'm really concerned about that, because I think that people, sometimes when there's so much fear and someone tells you what you want to hear, then you end up paying for this false sense of security, and then they make it worse for you, you know? And so, I don't know. I'm really worried about that I think that there's going to be a lot of notario fraud. I think that there's going to be a lot of people trying to make money off other people, and they're going to leave them with removal orders. I think that that's what's going to happen. And that makes, that kind of infuriates me, you know, that I don't know. I'm really worried about that. So I'm like, oh, please make sure you go see an attorney, and you should even look up the attorney on the bar website and look to see if they have discipline. I mean, you should be kind of be informed, you know, like you should really be informed. I mean, like, I get it. Like, I think the practice of law is hard. And I think being an immigration attorney is hard, because there's so many changes happening continuously. And, but don't lose your common sense. You know, like when they're like, ay, pues me dijeron por ahí. Like, oh, they told me that because I have 10 years, now I can get my green card. And I'm like, okay, are you listening to yourself? What does that sound like to you?
Yeah.
That sounds like an amnesty. Like, okay, yeah. Like, wouldn't we all be doing this? Yeah. Like, do not lose your common sense, no, you know? 100%, yeah. Don't do it. If it sounds to be too good to be true, it probably is.
Definitely. Yeah.
So do not lose your common sense. Don't lose it. Don't lose it at the door, because you want to be hopeful, because you want, yeah. Oh my gosh. Yeah. Like right now, and I'm getting a lot of families too, where they're like, oh my gosh, what if I do get deported? Like, maybe I need to start giving like a power of attorney to my 19-year-old. And they're like, but I don't really want to do it, you know, because my 19-year-old, you know, so I don't know. I'm just telling everybody, like, take a deep breath. Take a deep breath and let's really kind of evaluate, you know, and there might be like a case by case basis for you to make some determinations. But sometimes it can lead to be like, you know what, maybe what you need to do is put everything in a trust, and you probably need to do some estate planning. Yeah. And not necessarily because of this, but just in case anything can happen. Right. So don't lose common sense. Do not.
Yeah, definitely. Link is going to be in the description. You got to go make an appointment with.
I don't know.
But, yeah, she got to make an appointment.
Just saying, like, I think part of it, I do see a lot of it being part of educating too. You know?
100%, yeah.
So I don't know. I'm kind of glad to be here because I think that we do need to. I do think I have a duty, you know, and I think a lot of I think a lot of the immigration attorneys have a duty to kind of educate people and be like, okay, these are your rights. This is I'm trying to get out there, and I know a lot of immigration attorneys who are doing the same that are doing the same thing.
Yeah, 100%. I think it's valuable, and I think this is one of the advantages and the benefits that we have now compared to 20 years ago is we have the internet. We have more access to bilingual platforms. A lot of us that grew up knowing what that feels like to be in those situations mm-hmm. are now old enough to be able to speak about them and to be able to warn people and say, hey, this is what we went through. Don't get you know, mm-hmm. done over by the same kind of people that are trying to scam you. Make sure you go to someone that knows what they're talking about. Go to someone that mm-hmm. passed the bar that, you know, studied for 3 days and, you know, did all that, even though it's not as hard as the accounting exam. mm-hmm. You know, that is one of the advantages I would say that we have now.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, like, and you should check too, because I think a lot of the notarios, there's that whole language thing, you know, that a notario usually in our home countries or especially in Latin American countries, a notario is an attorney.
Yeah.
And so, and it's not here, right?
Here, like, don't you just do like online courses?
Yeah, you just do an online course, yeah. And you're just verifying signatures, really, that person is who they say they are. So that if you just do a little online course and you get your notary certificate. But I think that where the fault comes in is where then the notary, the notario, does, you know, the client is calling them abogado, abogada, attorney, and they're not correcting them, you know, so they're always led to believe that they're an attorney, and that's problematic.
Yeah, it's like going to McDonald's and calling the person like chef, right?
They are technically, yeah, but you know. You don't want to eat that.
That's funny. It's just
Chef Noah.
No, don't eat my food. No, don't please.
That's funny. So I don't know. Just be aware. Yeah. Definitely be aware.
For sure. Another thing that kind of falls in that similar situation, I would say, is work permits. So I know, for example, for me, like I was 10 years old. It was like almost 15 years now. My dad, after getting put. Getting detained, having a deportation order, going through the legal proceedings of him being allowed to stay here, he got a work permit, but it's something that has to be renewed like every year or every few years. And again, it's very similar to DACA where you're not allowed to leave the country. For people in those positions, what are some of the ways that they might be able to obtain legal citizenship? Is it very similar to DACA or is it something different?
It's going to be different because depending on what category they are, they're probably not going to be able to request an advance parole.
Mm-hmm.
And so that makes it a little bit different, right? So it depends, you know, like I think it's going to depend on whether do they have the legal entry? Are they going to have the qualifying relative to be able to request the waiver? You're probably going to have to terminate the proceedings because they were in removal proceedings. I think that that's kind of like one of those misconceptions about, like by way of example, right? Like asylum, right? Mm-hmm. Asylum is a way that, and I think that's where like the biggest scams happen, right? And I have to say that I won't even practice in asylums because I think that the probability, well, the percentage is like super low of
like success.
I think it's like, yes, I think it's like 3%.
Wow.
It's like, I think the last time I checked is like, of all the asylum applications, it's like 3% get granted. It might be between 3 and 6%. So you can see, right? And I get it. In some circumstances, that's the only application that you can file, right? Especially for people that are just coming into the country initially and they get detained at the border. That might be the only way, you know, that they have this credible fear to returning to their country. And so then the asylum application is, but I have seen notarios and even some attorneys, even though some attorneys won't sign their name, that's mm-hmm. always sketch too. Okay. If an attorney is telling you, you're going to file it on your own and then I'll come in and help you later. Red flags, right? Red flags should be going off. Red flags should be like, okay, maybe this isn't something I should be doing if the attorney's not willing to sign. but normally you have a year You have a year to file an asylum application from when you enter. The thing with asylum applications is if you're denied, then they put you in a removal proceedings. And this is what I'm telling you. There are cases where you would get the benefit of being in removal proceedings because you've been here for 10 years. You have the ability to apply for cancellation or removal. You might have kids. You might have kids with disabilities, which really brings your case to a higher level, right? And so I know that there's notarios and even attorneys that will recommend, hey, apply for asylum so you get placed in removal proceedings so then you can gain access to citizenship that way. You know, I personally think that is very high risk. You know, like I wouldn't recommend it. But people get happy because I have seen where it ends up being that they end up with a removal order, but people get excited because they get the work permit, right? While you're in the process, you might have a work permit, even though in the end you're going to be removed. Mm-hmm. So, you know, they're like, well, and it depends the way you view it, right? Some people are like, oh, well, at least I got to work legally for a few years. And, but having a removal order just has so many implications, you know, so many implications. Yeah. So,
well, I think that's the problem. The fact that when they go to these attorneys, they're not telling them, hey, this is only a 3% chance, right? Like, it's very, very difficult to go that way. And I think that's one of the problems that a lot of people have with the way immigration works is most of the issues that people really disagree with are because of the asylum. The fact that it's a very inefficient system, the way they're judging whether someone deserves or doesn't deserve asylum, and also like where they keep them, because that's the whole thing of like they're letting them stay in the country until they decide, and then they have to go look for them, and then we're wasting money on that stuff. And then people but then you look at the conditions on the border, and those conditions are horrible as well. So you're like, well, we can't keep them there either, because you know, who would put another human being under those conditions? And yeah, the whole system is just very inefficient.
Very inefficient. Yeah, we have a lot of work to do, right?
Yeah, for sure. We have some questions from our listeners. We were hoping can get answered as well.
Let's see.
Okay, so someone said, I'm a U.S. citizen. My girlfriend has a tourist visa. For her green card, should we get married here in the U.S. or in Mexico?
Ah, it's a very, very good question. You should definitely call me. No, I'm serious. You should definitely, definitely call me. I mean, because when you have a tourist visa, you know, there's, if it depends where, if you, to consular process, you know, obviously, you can consular process or they could adjust status here. And so, there's a lot of implications that come with that. So yes, it does make a difference. Well, it wouldn't necessarily make a difference, but if you get married in Mexico, I have seen where then if she tries to come in and visit, they'll deny entry, you know, they'll deny entry because they think that she's going to come and stay so that you could adjust. So yeah. So you should definitely call me because it depends what your goal is and what your plan is.
Right. And mm-hmm. would that change depending on if they had a fiance visa or a different kind of visa?
Well, I just don't know that a fiance visa would make sense, you know, because she already has, she has a tourist visa. Yeah, she's able to come in. Usually people will get a fiance visa because it goes a little faster than a marriage visa. Mm-hmm. And that person doesn't have, they can't enter, you know, like they've already tried to get a visa, or the times to get a visa right now, tourist visa, is like 2 years. It's a long time. So you're trying to get them to come as soon as possible.
Right.
And sometimes it's about timing.
No, absolutely. After that whole process, like how much time does it take to get some legal status, like a green card or
under a fiance?
Or yeah, under like that process of marrying someone that's not from the US.
Okay. If that person has never been to the US, I would say within a year and a half, they're here. Mm. Yeah, it ends up being pretty quick, you know, because
yeah.
if you have no inadmissibilities, you know, and inadmissibilities in being that you've never been in the United States, you've never entered illegally, you don't have any type of criminal history, it tends to go a lot faster than if you're here, especially if you're in the United States illegally, then it's just going to take a lot longer. you know, I think the pandemic really played a big part in the delay. You know, prior to the pandemic, you know, through a spouse, even though you entered illegally, it probably in 2.5-3 years, you would have your green card. And now I think it's more like 6 to 7 years.
Wow.
You know, the waiver was 42 months. I think it's gone down to 39 months. And you're waiting here, but you don't have a work permit during that time. So that's like 4 years of you're just, you know, it's, and then it seems like you're always in a line, you know, first you're in a line here first where they're verifying that the marriage is real. And then you're in the line of the waiver. And then you're in the line to wait for your consular interview. So you're just like constantly in line, you know? And so when you tell people how long it's going to take, then they're like, I guess I'll just wait. And then they wait 3 years and now it's 10 years. You know what I mean? I'm like, you just got to start. If you can do it, you just got to start. You just got to do it.
For sure. Yeah, that's the biggest takeaway from this episode is just do something. Like, start get something
early. Rolling. Please, start early. Start early.
If you can do it, you got to do it.
Yeah, for sure.
And while he pulls up the next question from our viewers, one question I had is like, why do you think there's so much like bureaucracy when it comes to like, you know, trying to legally immigrate to this country? Like, is it like that in other countries?
Oh my gosh. You know what? Actually, I believe not. I have a friend who's an immigration attorney and she just got married and she's actually for England.
Mm-hmm.
Her husband now is from England. And so she's going to end up moving to England because she'll have status in 3 months.
Yeah.
In 3 months.
Wow. Yeah.
In 3 months. I'm like, wow, that's crazy. So she's going to go there first and then she's going to petition him because that process is going to take like a year and a half before mm-hmm. he'll be able to immigrate to the US.
Mm-hmm.
So it's crazy. I mean, I just kind of like make it make sense, right?
Yeah.
Make it make sense. I don't know. It's hard. It's hard being away from the people you love, you know?
Like, absolutely,
I don't know. I don't know. I don't know. I don't know that I could do it. You know, that's tough.
Yeah, we might have to start moving to the UK instead of to the US.
Yeah. Maybe. I don't know. You know, I've been hearing that a lot, that they're like, man, you know, like we might need to leave. But I don't think that that's a solution. We can't run away.
No, definitely.
We cannot run away. We got to make.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Especially when we've paid so much into this system. Like, we can't just give it away for free and then go somewhere else. Like, you know, it is what it is. Another question that came. Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, no. I was just saying, like, after the election, you know, like, I was just like, I was on Reddit. I was like, y'all, let me look up how to move. And then people on Reddit were like, yeah, it doesn't work like that. It's problems everywhere. I'm like, damn, I'm stuck. Yeah. That's how you got to view it. But, I mean.
Another question that came up a lot was people are asking if you're allowed to share, I guess, in recent memory, what are some of your most touching cases that you've had?
Oh man, you know what? There's some that, okay. So I had this couple. Oh my gosh. And I was about to say their last name, but I won't. But oh my God, they were elderly, okay? They're probably 72. And they come in and they really came in because they're like, look, I keep getting these letters, okay, from Social Security. And they're like, they keep telling me that I'm eligible. But they want me to show them my legal, you know, my Social Security card. I think the wife was 72, the husband 76. And I was like, okay. They're like, hey, we had a good social, okay? Because we applied under Reagan, mm-hmm. under the SAW program. And they're like, we had a work permit from like 1988 to like 2001 or 2002. And they had been victims of notario fraud. Right. And so they'd been sent, you know, notices that they were going to revoke their work permits because they had determined that they hadn't worked in the fields like they had, you know, with the paperwork that they had submitted. And so they showed me, they're like, oh, look, we had our work permits. And back then, like we're talking like in the 90s, right? In the 90s, with those work permits, you were actually able to enter with them. Not like you can't, it's not like that anymore. Right. And I was like, okay, I'm like, did you, I'm like, when, you know, when was the last time you were in Mexico? And they were like, well, in the 90s, we went, you know, because my mom was dying in 1994, I think. My mom was dying. And we went out and we came in and we used our work permit. I'm like, okay. I'm like, you know what? I'm like, you're going to be able to get your green card. I'm like, we can fix. And they're like, the wife was just like, she gave me the dirtiest look. Okay. She was like, you know what? Do you know how many times we've been scammed? Do you know how much money we've paid attorneys? And you know how much money we have come in, and it has never worked out for us. It has never worked out for us. And so you're just trying to take our money. And I'm like, okay. I'm like, I am not trying to take your money. I am really just trying to tell you that you would be able to get your green card. You would be able to get your Social Security benefits. Then she starts crying, right? Because she's like, you know, she's like, my 50-year-old son is in Mexico. He was actually deported. I haven't seen him. I haven't seen him in 30 years. And I want to see my son. And I'm like, well, I'm telling you it can happen. Now, the filing fees are quite a bit, okay? Now, they're an elderly couple. The husband was still working. The wife could not work. I'm like, you know what? I'm like, look, I will help you guys out, you know, but you need to get the filing fees. The filing fees are the filing fees. She still is like really rude, by the way.
Yeah.
You know, so they leave, they come back, and they're like, we're going to do this, you know, but she was angry. She's like, we're going to do this. And you don't know how much money I had to borrow to do this, but like pissed, right? To make the long story short, they got their green card, okay? When I called them in to give it to them, she started crying, right? And she's like, oh my God. She's like, I thought you were scamming us. I'm like, no, I know you did. I know you thought I was scamming you. But look, I charged you like nothing. You know, like you think I was gonna, like, come on now, you know? And anyway, so then she starts crying. She's like, I'm gonna go see my son. Not only that, but then she got the retro for the Social Security, you know? So it was just like, man, at 70, 72 years old, you know, like it's, I don't know. So that one moves me, you know, because it was, they'd been here for a long time, and like 1982, and they were able to get their green card in, I think it was like 2021 when they got their green card.
Oh my gosh.
I know.
That's a long time.
It's a long time. Yeah. And now they're coming in and out, you know, but that's one of them. The ones that I think are the challenging ones are the ones that are most memorable. You know, I had a husband and wife. The wife son joins the military, so we're able to get a military parole. That's something else too. The military parole is a big deal. So if you have a spouse or a child that is in the military, you can get kind of like an advanced parole, but you don't exit. You know, it gives you like this parole, almost like a legal entry. And so the son joins the military. We get the parole. The wife had entered with the fake visa, you mm-hmm. know, with the fake visa. And so she's like, I enter with the fake visa. And I'm like, okay, look, your husband's going to have to fix first. You're going to fix, but you're going to need a waiver, you know, and you're going to need your husband to qualify for the waiver. So, you know, we got to do your husband's case first. Oh, wife was pissed. You know, wife is like, she just didn't, you know, you just don't like me. You like my husband. I'm like, okay, you know, okay. Husband stays with me. Wife goes to another attorney.
Wow.
Wife goes to another attorney. Guess what? Wife is denied, right? Why is wife denied? Because she needs a fraud waiver. So husband gets fixed. She comes back to me. She's like, you were right. And I'm like, yeah, I know I was right. You know, you needed the waiver. We got the waiver. It's approved. She gets approved. She wasn't as thankful though, because she still, I don't know. Some people just have a chip on their shoulder.
People are ungrateful.
Some people are ungrateful.
The Lord's work. People are ungrateful.
Oh my God. Some people are ungrateful. And then I have some really grateful clients too, you know, like, but the hard ones are the ones that I enjoy. I enjoy the DACA ones too. You know, like the DACAs when they've been here for so long and then they're able to get their green card. Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's the most rewarding work. It's the most rewarding work is when you get that green card, you're like, we did it. You know, like, no, oh my God, sure. It's, we used to have a sign on our, you know, finally legal.
Oh, like they could take a picture or something?
Yeah. It was like, finally legal. Like, let's go. But the ones where the people have been here a really long time without status, I think those are the most rewarding. Or when they've gone to other people and they tell them they can't do it and then you can do it, you know, I'm like, no, we can do it. We can definitely do it. And they're like, oh, but I went to.
Yeah, they can't do it. We can do it.
We can do it. We can do it. Yeah, we can do it. Show me what you got. And then you're like, oh my God, I can't believe you did it. I'm like, I know. I told you we could do it. You know, so.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. When the families are separated like that, like my dad, I mean, he's been here. The last time he left, I think I was 1 year old and I went with him. So it was like 99. And, you know, his parents passed away, not being able to go see them before they passed, them being sick. And his sister was actually finally able to come this
last year, right before Christmas, and they hadn't seen each other for 25 years, and it was just so weird getting to see them like be together in the same place. Because I had seen her when I went to Mexico, and obviously I see my dad, but getting to see them in the same place, and I can't imagine like being away from my siblings for 20 plus years, like seeing them grow, like. When, like, obviously you can FaceTime, but like seeing them in person, like seeing how much they've aged, like how much life they've lived,
yeah,
like seeing their kids old, like seeing where they live, like where their house is, kind of like how they live. It's very, like, very interesting.
Those, I do get clients that send me their videos, you know, when they go, oh my God, those ones are, I'm like, oh, you know, like, thank you for sharing it with me. It's, yeah. Yeah, I don't know. You know, like I've always felt like I was going to do something, right? I mean, like I was going to do something. And sometimes I feel like maybe I'm not doing enough, you know? And then when I'm like, okay, I am touching individual people's lives and sure, making it better. And then I'm like, oh my God, is that enough? I don't know. It's interesting, like to impact someone's life in that way. I don't know if that makes sense.
No, I think. Compared to most people, like you being able to directly see you directly changing people's lives, and not just that, but like their whole trajectory going forward, because it's huge.
It's like, huge.
Like
it's huge.
Their children being able to grow up and go to school and have jobs and get married and live good lives, and like it's huge what you're doing for sure. So you should definitely never think you're not doing enough.
I don't know. It's tough. It's tough sometimes for sure.
Yeah. And for sure. And for the people watching, like, how would I know whether to go to a legal professional such as yourself?
I definitely think that it's in the news so well. Like, I don't know, 100% of my, 100% of my, the people that come to me is by referrals, right? Mm-hmm. It's everybody that, you know, everybody, it's word of mouth, like, oh, so-and-so send me, you know? So it's like, I think that there's definitely something to be said about word of mouth, you know?
Yeah.
And so you should be talking to, I think the immigrant community is pretty, they feel safe. It's a safe place when you know it's another immigrant.
Yeah.
I don't know, with this chaos that's being created, I think that is going to be like, you know, like, I don't know, when I was growing up, you did not say you were an immigrant, you know, you try to keep that on the down low because the migra was going to come and get you know? And so I feel like there's that sense coming again, you know, that you just got to like,
not tell anyone,
like you just got to. And so I don't know that that's a good thing, you know, like we've been talking about how do we get the word out, you know, and like, do we announce like immigration talk? And they're like, oh, you know, people are going to feel like, ahí van a llegar, you know? Yeah. You know, so it's like, I don't know. So part of it is like, okay, maybe we do it in this type of venue, or we have people log in and you could do it through FaceTime, you know, so that so that way you can see different resources.
Yeah.
And there's so many areas. And like I said, immigration is so
broad
and expansive. You know, there's some areas that I don't do, but then I send off to attorneys that I know are going to keep it real with you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're going to keep it real, and they're going to be like, hey, all you can do is an asylum case. You're probably going to lose. But this is what you're going to be able to, you know, and they will keep it very real. And that there's something to be said about that too. Yeah.
Well, if there's any way we can ever help with putting something like that together, please let us know. We'd love to be a part of getting the word out and helping as many people as possible.
Yeah, I think I'm going to look to you guys. If you guys think of ways, right? Because I'm so but I know that I have the resources where the attorneys that say, hey, yeah, let's do it. I have a friend who has a business, and she's like, you know, my business, my work, my employees are very, very concerned, and they don't know what they need to do. So I was like, girl, well, let me go talk to your employees. And so I got another attorney friend, and we did something, you know, like know your rights. Like we did a PowerPoint, and it just made people think like, okay, people more aware about what to do if they're faced with difficult situations, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Are there any more questions?
I got a few more.
Go ahead.
Yeah. Sometimes they get carried away and just keep yapping all day. But no, I'm joking. But like something I was thinking about too, with like obviously the current administration, just hearing you talk, like for young people out there who want to like, you know, stand up and say something like, hey, wait, this is wrong how we're handling this issue. Like, how do we like, I guess, you know, stand up and like fight against what's going on currently?
I've been thinking about that. You know, did you guys see the videos from the east side where there was like those altercations because there was...
I live there.
Wait, huh?
Yeah.
Like right, what happened?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you see it?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't know that that's the way. I keep thinking about this because I keep thinking like the time to do something is now. And like when I see like all the Mexican flags flying, I think that that sends the wrong message. Mm-hmm. I really do, because I think, again, it's perception, you know? And so I think when you see it, then they're like, okay, you're so proud, then why don't you go back? You know, like I think it sets off the wrong triggers. Yeah. So again, I think that if we're in this new era where social media, all of those things show a different, a certain portrayal, I think that we got to be smarter, you know? And I keep thinking about Martin Luther King and his peaceful marches, and about, you know, like, I think that was just so much more powerful than these flags. And I'm like, I feel like we need an icon. That's, and I just don't know agree. What it is.
Yeah.
I wish I knew what that icon is, but I know that it's not the Mexican flag. I know that that's not it, because what we're trying to say is that this is our country too, you know? And I am 100% Mexican American. I travel to Mexico. That's who I am, right? But I don't know that I need to parade the flag for people to know. Do you know what I mean? So I don't know. We got to be smarter about it. And so you guys are younger. Maybe you guys can help us come up with what that icon should be, you know? Because we're not against America.
No, 100%. I think you touched on it exactly. I think the biggest issue is we don't have a Martin Luther King. We don't have someone who is going to stand up and tell us, okay, this is the way we're going to do it, and for people to get behind it. I think everybody wants to protest their own way. And because of that, we're just giving them low-hanging fruit to pick on. Like you said, if we all stand outside doing donuts in cars and holding Mexican flags, that is exactly what they're going to take and post on the internet and say, see, this is why we shouldn't have them here. Damn. So exactly like you said, like it takes discipline. It takes someone to step up and be a leader. And, you know, whatever that comes with, you're going to have to deal with it. And for everybody else to sit down and say, okay, in order for us to make progress, we have to all get united and move in the same direction. Mm-hmm. We can't all be doing our own little thing and everybody protests differently. And no, we want it to be all about us. And we want to be like seen. It's not about us. It's about everybody together. It's about the collective, not just a single individual wanting to, you know, do donuts or, you know, yell at cops or do whatever they think they're doing, burning flags. Like, what are you doing? In my opinion, like you're playing exactly into the hands of what the other side thinks you are.
Yeah.
So I don't know. That's my two cents, I guess.
And another question I had too, you know, you had mentioned it, I think, before we had started recording, but you've been in the legal field for over like 25 years.
Yeah.
So could you kind of just speak to like, you know, your career up to this point?
Sure. You know, I'm from the east side too. I'm from the east side. I'm originally from Juarez.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was born in Mexico.
I think that's more dangerous than the east side.
Girl, 100%. 100%. 100%. 100%. Well, technically, I think I would have been considered. I think that there's a lot of east side, north town beef. And I was north town for a little bit, too. Yeah, I was north town, too.
We might have to censor you so we don't get your enemies now.
I'm sorry. So I grew up, but I came when I was 7. So like I went to CP Squires and JD Smith, and I graduated from Rancho High School. Mm. Go Rancho Rams.
Shout out Rancho.
Shout out to Rancho. Ooh. And so people are like, oh, you went to the magnet school. I'm like, no, I live 2 blocks away.
I didn't know Rancho.
And it was back in the day before magnet schools started. I did have the option to be bust out, you know, but I didn't. I stayed at Rancho, and I did my undergrad here, and then I went to Gonzaga Law School because Boyd was not open yet. So So Boyd wasn't open yet. But I went to law school, and I was a pretty young attorney. So I passed the bar the very first try. The bar exam is really hard, especially in the state of Nevada. But I worked. My first legal job, I was in-house counsel for the school district.
Mm-hmm.
And then from the school district, I switched sides, and I was general counsel for the teachers union, actually. Mm. For quite a bit of time.
So you already knew all their game plan. You were like, let me help you guys now.
Yeah. Well, they came in and they're like, hey, will you come and be our general counsel? The school district had to sign a conflict waiver, actually, right, for me to switch sides. And they did. And that was really interesting. So I did employment law for a long time, because when I worked for the school district, I mostly did the disciplining of like teachers and support staff. And then when I went to the other side, to the teachers union, then I was trying to protect, right? So that was kind of really interesting, I think, you know, to provide me with kind of a view on both sides of things. So I did employment law for a long time. I still represent a couple of charter schools, which is kind of unique, just because there's not that many people that do education law. So I do some type of civil litigation as well. But and then I was like, man, I always really wanted to use my language, you know, use Spanish, and I obviously didn't use it that much in that field that I was in. So I went into private practice, and I started doing immigration and family law in 2012. So I opened up my practice 10 years ago, my own little law firm 10 years ago. And when you think about just things that you never thought you could do, you know, I never thought I would be opening my own law practice. But here I am, you know, here I am. And sometimes it takes other people, you know, that believe in you. My husband, and when I've been married a long time too, longer than I've been an attorney. He went with me to law school. Wow. Who would have thought? But he's like, no, you need to open up the office. You need to open up the office. And he was not wrong. He was not wrong. Because right now I have the ability. I have the ability to do what I want, you know, and it does go both ways. There are people that I don't take, you know, that I'll be like, no. Like, look, no soy monedita de oro. I'm definitely not everybody's cup of tea. And the same thing, you know, like to be in this place where you can decide what kind of cases you want to take, what kind of law you want to practice, and still be passionate about it. I don't know. I'm feeling super blessed, you know, like, I don't know. I'm like this. I'm like, ay Dios, thank you for my blessings. Now what I want to work on is legacy, you know, because I want other people to do the things that I do. And I know that they are, but I'm working on legacy. I feel like that's really important. That's my next step. I don't know what that'll look like, but I'm trying to work on that.
And that's something I'm kind of thinking about too, is just like, you know, I have a friend right now, he graduated from Boyd 2022, right? So he's a public defender right now for the city. And like, you know, obviously he's smart, driven person like yourself. And what I'm kind of understanding, hearing your journey, is that like your law career will sort of like grow and change and whatnot.
Yeah.
But do you have any advice for like, you know, young lawyers who want to make an impact?
Man, public defender work is, talk about impact too. You know, that's like, I thought I was gonna be a public defender right out of law school.
Mm-hmm.
And it just didn't work out that way. You know, I ended up at the school district. What I will tell you this, I felt like the people that are government employees, you get trapped in all the comforts of that.
Mm-hmm.
And all the comforts of you know, that the hours are manageable. The pay is good. All the benefits that come with it, you know, the PERS, I have to tell you, I think most of the people that I worked with at the school just are still government employees, right? Because you don't make that leap, you know? So I think you can't be scared. And I mean, what I love about the law is that you don't have to get burned out, you know? It's like there is this catch 22, because people are paying you for your experience, right? And so the more time that you spend in an area of law, the better you get at it. But I've never been scared of trying new things. And I think, you know, don't be scared of trying something new. And you'd be surprised, you know, and that'll keep you fresh and motivated and not burned out.
Yeah.
And not burned out.
That's a good insight. And I think that insight not only works for law, but like anybody in any career.
Don't be scared of trying new things. Even, you know, you get used to the routine of it all. So no,
And then one more question I had, like when you made the switch over to immigration and family law, like was there anything inspiring that switch?
You know what? I think it's like the language thing, right? Like for me, like I really wanted to be able to talk to my people. I know that may sound, I don't know if some people are going to take it derogatory, but but I really wanted to talk I wanted to be able to talk in Spanish, and I wanted to be able to, there is such a big thing, you know, like that when you can talk directly to your client and your client is understanding you and there's not this intermediate person translating or interpreting, it's a big deal.
Yeah.
It's a big deal, you know, and I don't know that there's enough of that. You know, I don't know that there's enough of that where people are really understanding the process. And I don't know. It's a big deal coming out of court and being able to say, hey, this is what happened. This is, you know, in their own language. It's huge. So I think it was that, you know, I really wanted to be able to have that type of impact. And I didn't think I was having it in the world I was in. I was having a different impact because I think it is important to have people of color. And, you know, with all this DEI things going away, like, I think it's really important to have people of color in those positions, you know, like, I think like the school district, I wouldn't even say the first year. Again, I was a young Latina. I want to say at least three times people thought they thought that I was a receptionist. You know?
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, at least three times, you know. And I'm like, no, I'm the attorney. I guess what? I get to advise you on what to do.
Yeah.
I'm advising you. And that is empowering. No, you know? 100%.
I think
that is empowering.
Seeing people that look like us and have our shared experiences goes a long way on both sides, right? Yeah. I'm sure it feels more rewarding to you to be able to directly communicate with your client. And for the client, it means the world to be able to have someone that can talk to you in a way that you can relate, not just someone that's like, well, I'm just paying you for your services, and if I understand the message, I do, and otherwise I'm just on my own kind of thing.
And also like understands culturally as
exactly,
well.
Yeah, exactly.
A lot of this stuff is so much like, you know, the body language and just like, it's just a lot of, you know, rigor mode that gets lost. Cause if you were talking to someone that, you know, they might know the law and they might know how to apply it, but if they don't know how you grew up, then, you know, it makes that process just like so much difficult.
There's such a disconnect. I mean, like when I think about that 100% when it comes to family law cases, because they're so, there's just this whole disconnect, and there's a whole disconnect with the judges, you know, so trying to get the client to understand like, hey, the judge is not going to understand how, you know, your spouse is making extra money doing Santera stuff, you know, like, yeah. You know what I mean? Like, you're trying to, you know, they're like, what do you mean? They're not going to, you know, like.
Yeah. It sounds crazy when you explain it.
What do you mean with some mariscos on the weekend?
Yeah, you know, like, you know, you're trying to, anyway, so that, like, it's just really interesting. It's that whole dynamic too, but yeah, or, you know, even moms, you know, they're like, oh, I have more rights because I'm the mom. Oh, not here. Yeah, you do not have more rights, you know, right? Not. It's an equal playing field. So, yeah, it's been, all of that has been, I enjoy it. I'm not going to lie. So, yeah, so I think it's like, you know, it's this catch 22 because I think that there's important work to be done in different fields, you know, like, I get that too. Like sometimes the marshals, if they're new, they'll ask if I'm the interpreter, and I'm like, no, not the interpreter. You know, I'm the attorney. So, but no, it doesn't. To me, I always view it not as, I don't get offended because I think the ones that should be offended is them, not me. I'm like, no, you're the one. You're the one that has the preconceived notion about me. So, it's been a good ride for sure. We'll see what happens. We'll see what comes next. Nah.
Thank you so much for sharing your time with us today. We really had a good time. It was a really good conversation. We hope we've been able to have good information for everybody listening. So when we get our Spotify deal, we'll send you the contract so you can
Let's go. Sponsor, Let's go. Yeah.
But for anybody that might have additional questions or they want to get in touch with you, how can they find you?
Go to my website. My number is 702-744-8081, and it's Africa Sanchez.
We're going to put it on the screen, link in the description, phone number, all that.
And if I can't help, I'll try and refer you to someone that I think could help in your case. And sometimes it's just about having resources.
For sure. Let them know you found her on the podcast as well. Yeah, guys, let them know where they can find you on social media.
Yeah, you guys can follow me on Instagram at Ocho Benji.
Y'all can follow me at N2DATK on all social media platforms.
Go ahead and follow my personal page. It's going to be at AKBTG. Follow the podcast page on the run.pod, YouTube, Instagram, TikTok, all that good stuff. Thank you guys so much for all the support week in, week out. We really appreciate it. Once again, if you have any questions at all, Africa Sanchez, phone number on the screen, link in the description. We'll see y'all next week for another episode. Peace.